You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 554. And listen, people, listen, I can't let it go on anymore. I got to mention this. It's gone too far already. Rod Stewart is still out there. He's still on the streets. I mentioned him before, and everyone's like, John, why can't my mom just, you know, why would she drive us to T-ball practice, listen to Rod Stewart? It's because the dude is messed up, and he's a pervert. And while you're out there in math class learning Algebra 2 or something, he's out there kicking soccer balls while your mom's clapping her hands and saying, oh, go, Rod. But listen, people, I told you about Tonight's the Night with the lyrics. I told you this before. Come on, angel, my heart's on fire. Don't deny your man's desire. You'd be a fool to stop this tide. Spread your wings and let me come inside. I told you about Hot Legs, where he says, Hot Legs, you're well-equipped. Hot Legs, oh, your pussy's whipped. Hot Legs, I just love your lips. That's Rod Stewart, people. I told you about that. And, here we go. And I told you about, you're in my heart, and there have been many affairs. Many times I thought I'd leave, bite my lip, and turn around because you're the warmest thing I've ever found. Oh, wait. Here we go. I told you about all that, people. But listen, you don't believe me. That's fine. This pervert's out there on the street. I would say he's one step away from like the guy in the trench coat walking up to schoolgirls going to school. But he probably is the guy in the trench coat going up to schoolgirls. Seriously. Listen, if you don't believe me, please refer to Rod Stewart's Storyteller. This is the box set put out by Rod Stewart, gigantic booklet where he goes over his entire history. This is Rod Stewart speaking. Now, there's about 100 songs covered in here. You know, what does he say about his cover of the Beatles' Get Back? This is all he says. What's this doing here? That's all he says. What does he say about Pinball Wizard? I have no opinion of this rendition of the song made popular by The Who. That's all he says. When he's talking about his song, Oh God, I Wish I Was Home Tonight, he decides – and this is Rod Stewart speaking, mind you. He says this is the best lyrics he ever written, and this is the only time in the entire 26-page book where he quotes his own lyrics. Here are the lyrics. Out of all the lyrics he's written, and he's written hundreds of songs, most of them bad, a few pretty good, but most of them bad. These are the only lyrics he quotes. And when he's talking about the Beatles, he's like, whatever, I don't care. Talking about The Who, whatever, I don't care. Talking about the Stones, Street Fighting, he says, I don't care. These are the lyrics that Rod Stewart chooses to highlight as the lyrics that define his career. Rod Stewart Storyteller, page 19. Oh God, I wish I was home tonight. Lyrics, I quote, send me a naked picture by the U.S. mail. Write a pornographic letter. You know I won't tell. Keep your legs closed tight. Keep your body under lock and key. Stay home at night and save all the best parts for me. Oh, yeah. All right, people. So listen, don't take my word for it. Rod's telling you who he is. This is what this is Punk News Podcast 554. Sorry to bring it up, but I just can't let it go on anymore. People need to know about Rod Stewart.
So I take it you're not excited about the new Faces stuff he says he's working on with Ronnie Wood.
You know, I'm a big Stones fan, and I know Ronnie is a Later Day Stones member circa 1974. It makes me question Ronnie that he wants to hang around with such a pervert, you know? I mean, like you know, Ronnie, like, you could hang out with Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and Charlie Watts, you know, some cool dudes that they've done some wild stuff. But they're not, you know, I'm not even going to quote the Hot Leg lyrics again, you know what I mean? I don't need to, you know? But he's choosing to hang out with Rod Stewart. And honestly, like, I've tried to get into the Faces. It's just too soft for me. It really is.
Yeah, me too. But come on, Young Turks. I've talked about that song on this podcast before. The good Rod Stewart songs are so freaking good. They're undeniably good.
Well, that's probably why I'm so enraged. Like if you see like a pervert walking down the street, you're like, that's a pervert, you know. But if you see a pervert walking down the street and he's singing Young Turks, which is a fun song to listen to over and over, you're like, God damn it, that pervert! Why couldn't anybody but that pervert have that song, you know?
Man, what did Rod do to like stick you with a hat pin this week? What did Rod do?
I'll tell you what he did.
Got your crosshairs on him.
I was listening to Rod Stewart's greatest hits. Well, listen, I'm sure M and Hallie are tired of my long-winded intros that have been the past few weeks, but I felt inspired. And why have I felt inspired is because it's out, people. It's out. I'm not going to do long-winded intros every week. I'm not going to plug this every week, especially going forward, but it's out. Architects of Self-Destruction, The Oral History of Leftover Crack. Out now via Rare Bird. You can get it at Rare Bird. You can get it at Amazon, but get it from Rare Bird. But if you can't get it from Rare Bird because you live in the UK, there are other independent distributors. And they send it for real deal bookstores, too. So all you got to go down to your local bookstore and say, hey, man, you got Architects of Self-Destruction? They'll say, yes, they're right over there. And if they say, no, we don't, then you can say, order it, and they'll get it for you at a reasonable rate. So I'm psyched. The reviews have been overwhelmingly positive, which I'm really blown away. I mean, I know Leftover Crack's a controversial band, but I'm thrilled that the reviews have been overwhelmingly positive. And also, people are kind of getting it in that, you know, this is a controversial band with some greatness and with some not-so-greatness, and they self-sabotage them. After every great triumph, Mediocre Generica, Fuck World Trade, Constructs of the State, they always sabotage themselves right afterwards, and that's who they are. And it's a lesson in art, and it's a lesson in madness and genius and all that in between. And plus, it gives you the story of the band, the positive and the negative. So people are – and also the podcasts have been – I mean, a lot of famous punk people, if you will, have been hyping the book, which I was really honored by. I'm not going to name them just because I don't know if they want me to use them as a sales pitch, you know, but some well-known punk people have been hyping the book, which really blew me away. And also – Brad and myself have been going on some podcasts. Brad's been doing most of the podcasts, and the podcasters have been loving the show, loving the book, and doing some great interviews. Check out John Jughead's podcast. Check out Punk Rockette's podcast. Vinyl Guy podcast is coming up. There's a whole bunch of other ones. Check out the Leftover Crack Limited Run podcast that Brad and I are doing. People are super psyched in the book, and frankly, I'm thrilled. I'm over the moon. I've been working my entire life towards this, and it's here. It was a chaotic journey. This is a chaotic – this band, Leftover Crack, really is Leftover Crack. They're a chaotic band. It wasn't easy getting there. But somehow – I mean, honestly, deep down I knew I would do it. And it was kind of insane because I'm not going to talk about everything from behind the scenes, but there were some pretty crazy moments putting this thing together. And I knew I would get it through, and I got it through. At least I got it across the finish line. So I'm thrilled. I'm excited. Book release show is going to be September 20th at Alex's Bar, and then the Punk Rock Bowling on Saturday night. Another, I guess, bigger book release show or just kind of a thing. There's going to be signings at both, special editions of the book, the zine, which I'm really proud of. And basically, I'm psyched. I've been working my entire life for this, and here we are, and I'm just drinking it up. And thanks to everybody that's been buying them and checking them out. I really, really do appreciate it. The publisher says sales are going real good, so I'm psyched about that. And so, listen, thanks, everybody, for real. And thanks to all the contributors. And thanks for you, the listeners, for listening to my long-winded rants about this book. But here we are, baby. We did it.
It's so cool. I feel like I should have, like, a noisemaker or something. I don't know. What can we do? For he's a jolly good fellow. it's, like, such a huge accomplishment. It's, like, real, and it's cool to hear you – I don't know. It's cool to hear you, like, I don't know, just, yeah, acknowledging, like, on a personal level, like, what, just how it feels to to just work so hard on something and finally get it out into the world like that. It's rad.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your guys' emotional support. The listeners might not ever, but I've done frequent rants before the podcast started, just blowing off steam about these guys. And it was a journey, and they are maniacs, but I'm glad I did it. And Brad did it too. But Brad and I worked on it together, and kudos to him, and kudos to Sturgeon for being a trooper. The book isn't always flattering of Sturgeon, although it says some nice things about him too, but kudos to Sturgeon for being a trooper and letting that go up. And here we are. I don't know what to say. Check out rarebirdlit.com. I am super proud of it. I did something that I normally wouldn't do, is I started reading another famous punk rock book that's a autobiography of sorts, which was dumb to do right before your book comes out because it's only going to make you feel bad about your book. And I'm reading it, and I'm looking like a total dick here. I'm like, my book's better than this book, and this book's famous, you know? So I don't know, man. I mean, I honestly know you're supposed to be humbled. Like, well, I just hope I'm contributing to the great line of book. Like I wouldn't put this book out if I didn't think it was awesome, but I think it's pretty friggin' awesome. And I think, I mean, we wrote this book specifically to go toe-to-toe with Please Kill Me by Lex McNeil, the greatest rock book ever. And did we achieve that? You tell me. I feel like we did, but you tell me. I mean, like – that was our high. That's a high mark to hit, and we really shot. I mean, we played to win, you know. So listen, buy the book, listener, and you tell me. And it goes off one either way because you bought the book, but you know.
I just got the notification that mine shipped. Mine is on en route to my house.
Oh, I know also, you ordered one. Well, thank you very much. Em already bought one, so Hallie and Em, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Even today, I'm so excited. This is all I'm going to do on the weekend, honestly.
And have I bragged on the podcast before that I was actually at the book release for Please Kill Me?
No, tell us about
and
that.
I have the poster from it that says like book reading here, like with book signing, like I have because it was at the Continental where I worked at the time. And so I got to steal the poster out of the window when the event was over. And it was amazing. Like, I'm trying to think. I feel like Mickey Lee and his band Stop, I think, did they were on stage doing music while the authors were reading from it. It was very, very cool. I hadn't read the book yet. It was like just coming out, but it was one of those things where you were in the room and they were reading from it and you were like, oh, this is amazing. Like you felt like, oh, this book is going to be like a thing. This is going to be like history, you know, like punk, you know, it's not only covering history, but just the book coming out was kind of like another piece of punk history. So yeah, it was just cool to have been there.
Were there any other notable rock people there?
Yeah, like a ton of people. And it's now like so long ago that I like don't actually even remember. But it was like everyone from that whole scene, you know, like anyone that was still alive was there. It was cool.
Honestly, Please Kill Me. Definitely a great book for sure. I mean, that's an amazing book. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe someone, you know, like 25 years from now is going to be talking about how they went to your book release and it was like this like impactful moment.
Or it might be, listen, people, it's Leftover Crack. It might be a total shit show, which is part of the deal with Leftover Crack. You know, sometimes they're the greatest band in the world and sometimes they're the worst, you know, and I'm telling you people, I don't know. I do know that the lineup for this show is going to be super cool and super unique. And we're going to have cool stuff there. As to the show itself, it very well may be amazing and it might be a total disaster. And listen, that's Leftover Crack.
Mm-hmm.
I will say when Leftover Crack played Punk Rock Bowling Asbury Park, they were either the best or second best band there because all the other bands at the main stage were kind of like professional sounding, like squeaky sounding, like squeaky clean. Like we play our songs, we play them well and da da da, and now we're going to do a kick and da 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 da. And you know, and here's the chorus, sing along with us. We're a part of the crew. And so are you, everyone's it, you know, those kind of bands. And Leftover Crack comes out and they open with a crust punk version of Bruce Springsteen's Dancing in the Dark in Asbury Park. And I don't know if they were making fun of him or saluting him. And it was like they were like a for real deal band and they played straight up crust at Punk Rock Bowling where all the other bands were doing pop punk and, you know, that kind of stuff, which I thought was super rad.
That sounds awesome. Also, we're part of the crew, and so are you. You now have to pen that whole song. I need to hear the rest of that song.
Isn't that basically like every Cox Bar song?
Yeah.
let's play. We're running late, but that's fine because I've been bragging for the past 30 minutes and or complaining about Rod Stewart. Let's play a song, come back, and we'll hit the news. What song should we play? Let's play some Leftover Crack. Let's play, should be a self-destructive song or I don't know, man. It's going to be a Leftover Crack song. Buy my book and Brad's book, Architects of Self-Destruction, out via, oh, I know. Let's do my favorite. Let's do the Leftover Crack version of Infested, which, of course, was originally written by Choking.
Yes.
But this is the Leftover Crack version, the rare one. Architects of Self-Destruction, out now via Rare Bird Lit, and we'll be right back. And let's hit the news after I cough. And the news is important this week because we've got a lot of crazy stuff to talk about. Guns N' Roses, they've released their first new song in 13 years. And the first song was Slash in like 30 years or so, or something like, or 20 years, 25 years, or no, 28 years. The first song was Slash 28 years. The new song is called Absurd. Halle Bullet, was this song absurdly good or absurdly bad?
I mean, you know, it wasn't, it's not going to, I don't think it's going to blow anyone out of the water. And it was fine. You know, honestly, production wise, it kind of reminded me, this is not a compliment, it reminded me of like that era of U2 when like Bono like wouldn't stop wearing those glasses and he was pretending to be that character, The Fly. Do you know what I'm talking about? It was like there's
Jeff Goldblum. He was trying to be Jeff Goldblum.
I don't know. Like Bono had this like whatever. It's not important. Just to say that I wasn't like a fan of like the production on this. It reminded me of things that I think are corny. And then I was also, you know, like it's just also kind of it's a little weak because it's not a new song. Like apparently like they've been like playing this song in some form or another for like 2 decades.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like it used to be called, it used to have another title. And it was like, I think maybe it was written during the years where they were doing the sessions for Chinese Democracy. So this is like a long time ago. So it's just, to me, if you're going to give yourself all these kudos for like putting out this new song and try to get everybody all excited about it, it should be like actually a new song. Or just say like it's unreleased. I don't know. That's something about it just seems like phony and silly to me. That being said, they're old and I'm glad they're not dead. And I'm glad they're making music just to make me listen to it. I hope someone likes this. was this just absurd enough for you or too absurd?
For Em or me?
Oh, either.
I thought it was absurdly bad. I thought this was really bad. Yeah. Like, I'm surprised at how bad this was. I like that he's got kind of a punk thing going with the vocals, sort of, you know. But there's no song there. It's like, and here's a part, and here's a part. And there's no real momentum. There's no real lyrics. And it actually kind of had, like, a new metal shine to me. Like, almost, like, with all the vocal effects, it sounded like new. Who's doing new metal in 2021 aside from Code Orange? And someone should slap them on the wrist and say, nope, bad Code Orange. Bad, don't do that, you know. But listen, it's bad. It's bad. I would think, like with Guns N' Roses doing their first song in, like, 13 years and their first real song in like 28 or whatever with Slash, you think they're like, all right, you know what, let's just get a banging riff, I'm Axl, I'll come up with a chorus and we'll have a cool song. But no, it's this weird, it's one of these weird songs that happens to bands as they get older. As you can tell, there's like a million co-writers in here or like studio sesh guys that they bring in to specifically beef up a song or write a song. If the core of the song isn't there, no amount of studio magic or studio co-writers is going to beef it up. It's just kind of an aimless song. But the other question is why? I mean, like, people that are going to go see Guns N' Roses at this point are going to go see them. No one's going to go see Guns N' Roses because they released a, quote, new song that is terrible. You know, yeah. Guns N' Roses does lots of covers. They should just pick a rad cover, do a rad cover. Like maybe a Roxy Music song would have been interesting, you know. Or if they want something more popular, you know, like I don't know, an AC/DC song might be interesting, you know, something like that.
I like that you're pitching ideas to Guns N' Roses via the podcast.
Well, it's better than this song. Honestly, when I was in like middle school, I'd like Guns N' Roses a lot. I still like them, but honestly, now I think just like the first album, people say it's a legendary album, and it is a cool album, but it's also kind of cheesy. It's like Mr. Brownstone. It's like if you want to hear songs about heroin, listen to Leftover Crack, because they got songs about heroin. You know, Mr. Brownstone's like, he's out to get me, Mr. Brownstone. Like what are you talking about, Axl? Like, what, your heroin is chasing you around town? That's not how it works, Axl. You know, so what should I say? What's his name? What's his real name? Anyways, if you want a funny story about early Guns N' Roses, DFL have a hilarious story about Guns N' Roses before they were famous, although they liked the band. Anyway, and more. Was this song terrible, or is this going to be number one of the year for you?
Oh, boy. Yeah, top of the charts. Oh, my God. It was really bad. It was really, really bad. Why does he have an accent? Why is all this stuff happening? I love Slash. Slash is great. All of the solo stuff, great, awesome. Why did he do this? Like, I don't understand that at all. I get they're trying to make music again together, but like, they can do better than this. I did have a really, I got into Guns N' Roses after high school. I really hated them up until that point, and then something happened, and then I listened to everything basically except for Chinese Democracy, because no, but yeah, so I'm not like as much of a fan now as I was like a couple years ago, but it's just really sad, you know, like Slash is great.
<It's just sad. laughs>
Yeah,
there was something, yeah, it had a tinge of sadness. I'm with you.
Yeah. Like, don't do this to Slash. Don't do this to Duff. Just keep them out of it.
don't do Here's the DFL story. So Monty Messick was playing a show, and some guy says, hey, Monty, what's going on? And Monty's like, who is this guy? And he slides down his glasses. And he's like, it's me, Bill. And he's like, Bill? He's like, yeah, but I'm going by Axel now. And so like Monty Messick knew Bill when he was Bill, and then he decided to become Axel and kind of put on that classic Axel getup, which he doesn't really wear anymore, which is probably for the best because it would look kind of ungainly at his current age, you know. But, you know. Anyways, Emore, tell us about Bad Waitress, is something that is rad.
Yeah, Bad Waitress are really cool. I think we've talked about them a little bit before. So they're a four-piece punk band from Toronto, and they have, like, elements of grunge and kind of, like, arty kind of stuff going on. And they're really, really good. So they just released a video for their new song, Rabbit Hole. So it's an Alice in Wonderland-themed video, and they're at, like, inspired, I guess. They're at a tea party, and everyone's dressed up. So, like, there's a Mad Hatter. There's a rabbit who you find it at the end's really tall. There's, like, a winged demon, and there's, like, a nature demon. I wasn't really sure. But, yeah, they're eating, and they're drinking, and they're, like, they start a food fight and everything. So the video is a lot of fun. It looks like a lot of fun. And the song is very catchy. It's very good. So it's off of their upcoming album, No Taste. And I'm really looking forward to that because they've released Strawberry Milkshake and Delusions of Grandeur already, like previously. And both of those songs are really good. And this song is also really good. So I'm really excited. I really love this band. And I want to see them live at some point. So like that would be really nice. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And their visuals are great. Like the video for Delusions of Grandeur has like a cult vibe, kind of like Midsummer-y. And like Strawberry Milkshake's like strobing and zombies and stuff. So the Mad Hatter Tea Party thing like fits right in. And then at the end, when the person dressed as the rabbit comes out, you find out, like, they're on stilts. And they're just like, everyone comes here and, like, ruins my cakes and stuff. So it's good. What did you guys think of Bad Waitress?
If I say, don't come around here no more, does that mean anything to you? Do you know that song?
Mm. Oh, the Hit the Road Jack.
The Tom. Wait, so John. Okay, so hold on. So no worries. You're just too young. John, did you not watch this video and be like, WTF?
Indeed, I did. And Hallie Bullitt, with regards to Don't Come Around Here No More, you and I also have another fandom connection. Are you aware of that fandom connection?
No, what?
Originally pitched to Stevie Nicks by Tom Petty, and she denied it. Can you imagine if there was a Stevie Nicks version of that song?
Oh my God, stop it. Amazing.
But yes, I don't know if Tom Petty owns Alice in Wonderland or Stevie Nicks, because Stevie Nicks, of course, has the not Through the Looking Glass, the Other Side of the Mirror album, you know. But that being said, I did feel those vibes. But go ahead.
I mean, listen, I do like Bad Waitress. This wasn't my favorite song of theirs, but I do like that band. And I get that they're young, but like, They're already one of the greatest, like, most influential music videos of all of, like, rock and pop history is an Alice in Wonderland video where they're at the tea party and there is a Mad Hatter. And there is, like, so many of the things in this video are in this, like, incredibly iconic video. So I didn't know whether to be, like, annoyed and be like, how did you not know this? Or whether to just feel, like, bad to be like, oh, no, you didn't know. No, that's like, this video's already been done before. Like, that makes me feel so bad because you can't, I mean, the comparisons really, you can't not, if you've seen that other video, you can't not draw a comparison. And that other video is so fucking amazing that it just blows this one out of the water, which is not even a criticism of them. That just, that Tom video, it's so iconic. It would blow most amazing. It would blow most videos out of the water. So yeah, I don't know. That was just my thoughts watching this. That being said, I do like Bad Waitress and I wish them all the best. this to me was like, wait a minute, what? Like, I almost thought like, oh, like, is it going to be a parody of that other video? But it wasn't. It was just like this, like, not, they, it was like, they just didn't know. I don't know. It seemed kind of like funny to me. I don't know. John, I think it sounds like the parallels to the other music video didn't bother you as much as it bothered me. It hit me between the eyes in a way that made me like not able to watch this video from just like a neutral like standpoint, you know?
Well, I'm sorry how that Bed Waitress don't have the millions and millions of dollars to make a music video that Tom Petty had to live up to your expectations. That being honestly, I'll have to go. It reminded me, it's particularly the hat reminded me of the Tom Petty video because that is just Alice in Wonderland. Yeah. I thought this one was maybe a bit more LSD'd out, a bit more cracked out. I will say that I think this band is cool. I like the video. I like the song. I like how the young people, especially honestly the young women, are making freaky music and being freaky in videos. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they're really like – I really feel like it's like, you know, kind of early CBGB scene or even super early West Coast hardcore scene, like the Screamers, the Germs, the Go-Go's, not Frank, the band that Frank was in, not From Hell, whatever the band Frank was in that was like that electronic band, I'll remember it in a minute. But I love how the young people, like in the 90s and in the 2000s, every hardcore band was pretty much exactly, even like the early 2000s, like 2010, like a lot of like all the beardo punk bands were kind of the same, you know, all the hardcore bands were kind of the same. The young people, especially young women, are making freaky deaky videos and freaky deaky music, and it is often quite aggressive, and I like how they might not even really be aware of quote what the rules are, which is good, and that's resulting in like freaky, cool, interesting music, and I'm digging it, and I think it was cool. And I like how this video looks like an acid trip with the colors and so forth, and I thought it was cool.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Like women in music in general, but like in this little subset of punk that we love, like women are just crushing it right now. Just like crushing it. And like really busting down so many walls, and it is an exciting time to be like a fan of this music, I feel like, you know?
I think it's kind of the hot scene right now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What I will say is I'm going to go a little off the map here is at Punk News, some of the commenters, not all the readers, some of the, you know, the dirtbag commenters that we have, not all of them are dirtbags, but like often they're very anti-sex. It's like, how dare you say, you know, but they tend to only like bands that have women in them where it's like, oh, that could be my girlfriend. You know, I can pretend that she's my girlfriend.
Yeah.
You can't pretend these girls are your girlfriend. These girls are like, you know, crazy, you know, which is cool. and they hate these bands, you know? And so I like how these bands are a threat to those dirtbags. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They're not concerning themselves with whether they're attractive to you or whether you like, whether you feel good like watching the shit that they're making. They are like, they are just doing what they want to do in a way that I certainly didn't have the inclination or maybe bravery to do as a woman making music in the 2000s. So in the early 2000s. So I think I'm totally daily blown away by, just what women in punk are doing right now.
Actually, I think you nailed it, and it's so funny, like, you said, they're not here to make you feel good, which that's my favorite kind of punk band, and, you know, a lot of the old dinosaur punk guys, they're like, you know, say, I don't want to hear about a safe space, you know, but you want a safe space because you want certain bands to be an exact way that doesn't challenge you at all. This band is challenging you, and is challenging your safe space, anti-safe space guy, just like the Germs, just like the Screamers, and so forth. And that's what's awesome about it. They're not here to make you feel good about yourself, which is great.
Yeah.
They're here to make you feel bad about yourself. And listen, here's something that's making a lot of people feel bad, but you tell me if they should feel bad about it or not. Punk Rock Bowling, which is still on as of right now, and I really hope it takes place, they've issued their COVID guidelines, their specific COVID rules. Basically, you have to show proof of vaccination to get in, or you have to show that you haven't had COVID within 48 hours before the show getting in. Interestingly, there's actually a pretty active Punk Rock Bowling Facebook. There's two. There's the official Punk Rock Bowling website, which is active, but there's also the unofficial Punk Rock Bowling fan club website, or how, you know, on Facebook. And honestly, look, like, a lot of people are into this. Some people are extremely against this and are saying, well, I'm not going. I'm selling my ticket. I don't want to be told what to do, blah, blah, blah. This is a somewhat divisive decision by Punk Rock Bowling. To their credit as to their integrity, the Stern Brothers and Punk Rock Bowling have made a decision, and they are sticking to it very strongly. And when people say, you know, I don't think you should do this, they're like, well, too bad, don't come. I'm not saying I definitely agree with that, but I'm saying I respect them for taking a stand and sticking to that stand and not trying to make everybody happy. But some people aren't happy. Hallie Bullitt, should people be happy?
I mean, this is so rough, right? I'm just like, this is one of those things where I'm just like, I'm so glad I'm not a school administrator. I'm so glad I'm not the organizer of a festival. I'm just like glad I'm not one of the people that has to be making these decisions, because you can't make everyone happy. It's like, for me, I look at something like this and, you know, I do take COVID seriously. I am concerned about contracting it, not because I think at this point with a vaccination, I don't think I'll end up in the hospital, but I worry about my unvaccinated kid. I worry about, you know, I'm on the spectrum of people that like definitely take it more seriously. And I look at this and I'm like, well, geez, like if you're, you know, so, okay. So people have to show proof of vaccination, or they have to have had a COVID test within 48 hours. And I'm looking at that and I'm like, well, right. But what was that person doing in the 48 hours after they took the test? They probably got on a plane. They probably, you know, and they're not vaccinated. So you look at someone like me and I'm looking at that and I'm like, I see that they're trying to put protections in place, and I don't have any problem with the decision they're making, but I look at it and I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm comfortable going to this event. If there's going to be a bunch of unvaccinated people that I know didn't have COVID 2 days ago, but then have since been traveling, like I don't, but then you have people on the other side of the spectrum. Like, you know, like you're saying, people are commenting and saying, I'm not comfortable with this because I don't want anyone telling me what to do. So it's like, I think the organizers, they've done their very best to try to be reasonable and land sort of in the middle in a responsible spot that gives all of us on both, on either end side of the spectrum and everywhere in between, gives all of us options for attending this event if we want and if we feel comfortable doing it. This is the same the Descendants just announced for their upcoming tour. This is the exact same policy they're going to have. It seems like a lot of festivals are also announcing that this will be their policy, either proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test 48 hours prior. So it seems like this is becoming the industry standard for the most part. And I don't know. I'm glad I'm not organizing a thing right now. It just seems incredibly stressful and impossible to keep everyone happy. Like, does this seem responsible enough to you guys, or too responsible, or not? It's like, where, if you're going to attend a show, what would you want the rules to be? And do you think people have a right to be upset about this?
I'll say that, you know, I think people, well, I still don't fully understand, like, I definitely got vaccinated, and I think people probably should, but I can understand that maybe, you know, maybe there is some risk involved. I get, because it is a new vaccine, and so I'm against, I get, well, it's a very tricky question, like how he said, and people are either A or B, but you are required to get like a polio vaccine to go to public school. And I think that's a good idea, because we don't have polio, you know. The only difference between the COVID vaccine and the polio vaccine is the polio vaccine was tested for 50 years or whatever, you know, where the COVID vaccine was like 18 months.
So, well, it hasn't even been approved by the FDA yet.
Yeah, well, that's right. There you go. So I can understand why someone might have some concern. And I am troubled. And honestly, I don't think the COVID, knock on wood, My gut tells me the COVID vaccine is either safe or ineffective, but not dangerous. But I could be wrong. I hope I'm not wrong. But that being said, I am troubled by the concept of a government or even a public entity requiring people to, A, get some kind of medical – requiring medical treatment, and also show proof of their medical history, you know. And if some deity could come down and say, John, it's COVID, you know, people need to show their vaccine card – just for this. And then after COVID's taken care of, you know, we're not going to ask for medical records again. It's all going to go away, and we're just doing this right now as a safety measure. I'd be like, all right, deity from the sky that is taking a weird interest in this this one thing that happened over, you know, and you've been around for presumably 20 million years, whatever, deity. But my concern is that corporations are extremely good at taking a chip of thing and then widening that chip into a slice and then a gap and then the whole pie, you know. I mean, let's look at concert tickets, which is the best example. There didn't used to be a service charge. Then there was a service charge. Then there's a service charge and a handling fee. You know, then there's a service charge and a handling fee and processing fee. Then the service charge, handling fee, processing fee, and now we charge you to print up the tickets as well. And then now there's a venue fee. You see what I'm saying? Is corporations don't take a little bit of the pie to solve the problem and give that pie back. They realize that society will accept with them taking that piece of the pie and then widen the pie, you know. And certainly there's value in having someone's medical records, which, you know, I can't contemplate how that could be sold, but a corporation will find a way. I mean, that's the whole idea behind capitalism, is that industry will find uses for things and make that valuable. That's what capitalism is, you know. And so I don't love that we have to show our medical records. And like I said, if I knew that was the end of the line and after COVID's knocked out, you know, then we won't have to show medical records at all anymore or whatever. I say, well, you know, maybe that's the hit we're going to have to take right now, but that's cool. My concern is that will it open up the gate to Ticketmaster always getting your medical info or other – your social security number? Like eBay got my social security – why should eBay have my social security number? eBay, you know. They get hacked like every other day by some Russian, you know. You know, I'm not thrilled about that, but I don't have a magic wand answer. I just wish people weren't dicks, and I wish people would behave responsibly, and they don't, because I saw Catbite on Friday, and it was an amazing show, and it was please wear your mask. You don't have to, but please wear your mask, and almost everybody wore their mask, except this one dude in a tank top and shorts with hairy arms and hairy legs, and he was greasy as hell, and he was blowing his nose all over, and I went to the other side of the room. And he came over and was moshing and blowing his nose near me. And I went to the other side of the room, and he's skanking on over and blowing his nose while he's skanking. And now I got a cold. You know what I mean? And so I just wish people weren't dicks, you know. That being said, I feel like COVID wouldn't be such a problem if people just had a little bit of common sense, but they don't. But that being said, I'm nervous about government or private entities forcing people to have common sense and regulating rights where people should be able to take care of their own rights. And I'm definitely not trying to be like an iced earth kind of guy. I'm not. I'm just trying to think about this through. I don't have an answer. Basically, I'm not sure that they're asking for COVID things just because I think you probably should get vaccinated and wear a mask. I think it's all a good idea. I just don't like giving my medical information to private entities because due to the threat that might be exploited at greater lengths in the future.
I mean, I know what you're saying, and I do think that that's like a solid example of what of the progression when companies, you give them a little bit and then it's suddenly it's like they just take and take and take more. But it's not comparable to me in that this is like service and like processing fees. Like that's not, it's just not a life or death situation for people. Like this is a life or death situation. And I'm not like the deity coming down and like proclaiming, you know,
I'd be at ease, you know.
But this does feel to me like this is extenuating circumstances. Do you know what I mean? This is a circumstance where I do think it is private entities, they do have the right to ask this information because they don't want to be hosting super spreader events because there's, I don't know.
Are you saying that private entities should have the right to ask whatever they want, or they should have the right to ask this specific thing?
I think they should have the right to ask this specific thing.
You're saying that because this is a life or death situation, hypothetically speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Yeah. And more. Solve the problem.
Well, here's my four-step plan, and I'll lay it out right now. I have a PowerPoint presentation.
She's like, no one asked.
Yeah, I have good ideas. Yeah, I agree 100%. I think people should just not be dicks. I really think it's that simple. Like, I think it's basic decency and treating, like, again, it's a life or death situation. It's people's health. Like, you don't go into a hospital, go up to somebody and cough on them, you know? Like, you wouldn't do that. So why is it okay to go out and cough on somebody in real life, you know, like in just a regular setting? So I think that if you can get vaccinated because it seems like it's a good thing. If you can't get vaccinated, there are tests that I know there's the false negatives and things, but they do work the majority of the time. And again, like, masks have been amazing. Not only just for COVID, but like the rates of like flu and seasonal colds and everything have dropped because people are taking better care of themselves, which is leading to the well-being of everybody. So I think that is important. And I understand the concerns about like the private entities and everything getting health information, because like that would be scary if they decided to capitalize off of it. But I do think that it's for this specific time. And once the threat of COVID has passed, which hopefully it does, it'll go back to, you know, everyone's business is everyone's business. But I think they're doing the right thing. And I think Punk Rock Bowling's doing the right thing with putting this into place, because I think a lot of people will feel at least some peace of mind going and being comfortable.
Yeah.
And the people, like vendors and stuff too. So all for it. It's nice to see like a, you know, because Punk's all like community and stuff. It's nice to see something that is looking out for everyone. And it's like, okay, well, if you can't get vaccinated, here's kind of the next best thing. So that's good to see too.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. Let's play a song and come back and get some more news.
And play a song.
All right. So, that's funny. You know, when you pick something and it just kind of sort of relates to what you're just talking about, and you didn't pick it that way. So anyway, the song I'm going to play is called Don't Hold Your Breath. And it's by a Halifax-based punk band Cluttered, and it's off their 2021 EP Accidents. So they're also on the Cool New Bands list, so check them out.
Thank you.
and that was Don't Hold Your Breath. But here's something you can hold your breath for. Will Punk News debut some awesome bands? And the answer is yes. And more, tell us about our list of awesome bands that we posted at the site that everyone should go check out.
Oh my gosh, I'm so stoked for this. This is awesome. Got lots of great contributions. So thanks to everyone who contributed. Thanks to everyone who has read it so far. Thanks to everyone who will read it and everything. This was a real pleasure to put together and find different bands and highlight some. Well, I highlight some of like my favorite bands and listen to new ones. So just with when we were talking about Bad Waitress and how like women and non-binary people making like really cool punk music that is supposed to make people uncomfortable and doesn't conform to the, oh, yes, I am, you know, for your consumption. There is so much of that, too, on this list. And I can't stress enough how all of the bands, like there is something for absolutely everyone on this list. It's just, it's great. Like if you want pop punk, there's that. If you want hardcore punk, there's that. If you want like, we have death metal, we have like everything, like just check it out and it's so good. And hopefully we'll be doing more of these as the time goes on. And this is really cool too. So two bands that I highlighted were Problem Patterns and Gender Chores, and they're both amazing. And Problem Patterns shouted me out online, and when I saw it, I screamed, and I have like a picture of it on my phone, and it's just it made my week. So yeah, do you guys have thoughts with the feature?
I got so much like amazing new music that I'm enjoying from this. It was really good, like really good recommendations. It was like, you know, there were like a few bands that we've talked about here on the podcast that were already on my radar, and just like a lot that weren't. So this, to me, is just like a music fan, this was a really cool resource. And I don't know, just like was particularly enjoying the stuff that I heard from like Hearts Apart and Doom Scroll and Dream Job. I don't know, just a bunch of new bands that I didn't know of. I mean, John, you obviously contributed to this list, but you know, what do you think of it?
I think Am did a great job. I think all the writers did a great job on it. Yay. In that it's a good job, great job, Am.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
the readers wouldn't do it. There's a lot of cool bands. My biggest gripe, I guess, with punk news in general, maybe, and we definitely are getting better thanks to M, is
thanks.
We had a lot of like, here's a beard punk band. It's 2007. Here's a beard punk band, you know, and here's a pop punk band, and here's a beard punk band, and I'm like, man, like we definitely should cover all those bands because the readers like those bands, and those bands are valid. But A, we need to cover more what I call maximum rock and roll type bands, basically like hardcore bands that are never going to get any bigger, even though they're constantly buzzing, but then they break up and no one talks about them ever again. But it is cool to check out those bands. Those bands are off on the scene live. And also kind of the freaky deaky hip bands that are hip and that are really kind of moving the cultural and art conversation forward. And that's exactly what these kind of articles do, and we're getting better at that. And honestly, like a lot of people were into this. And also, I love writing aggressively. And like people are, so a lot of times people be like, you know, here's a great new band coming out of Dayton, Ohio, and everybody's going to love them. You know, I like being aggressive and basically yelling at people for not liking them. So that's always one of my favorite things to do. So anyways, Em did a great job on this. You should check it out. It's really great. Google, come check out these cool new bands in 2021, and people should check it out. And a lot of cool bands in there. Here's an older guy that's doing some cool music. Dead Milkman, Joe Jack Talcum released a 3-inch record. And if you listen to the bonus Record Store Day podcast, I had a Record Store Day miracle in that I went. Well, I'm not going to retell the whole story. You can listen to the bonus episode if you want. Anyways, Joe Jack Talcum put a 3-inch record for Record Store Day. The A side is Record Store Day. The B side is Flat Earther and more. What'd you think of Joe Jack Talcum's limited 3-inch record?
I thought it was really good. I I was surprised by the harmonica, but I really liked the harmonica. It tied everything like together. The record store song, it was so nice because it's like he really cares, you know, like you can tell because it's all like it's an ode to record stores and going and stuff. And it's just like pure feeling, you know, like you can just picture like someone like walking in and just having like a making a day of it and everything. And it was so nice and really good. And then Flat Earther? Or is it, yeah, Flat Earther. That was good too. It was nice. It was like, just take them down a peg, you know? Like, I don't understand how you can believe that the earth is flat because there's so much evidence against it. Like, that is one thing that has always baffled me. Like, why that's so prevalent? Why people are like, yep, that's the truth. I really don't get it. But I really like the song about it.
Yeah, like, I thought in that song he was like, clearly like it was written to like conspiracy theorists and fact deniers and science deniers, right? It was like he's specifically writing about people that like still claim that the earth is flat, but it was clearly like an analogy for just people that willfully like refuse to believe like the evidence of the things that are true around them. And the line I liked the best was, he was like, you spend a lot of energy to believe the earth is flat, but why? And like, there is something about that I was like, yeah, like why? Like, why do you believe QAnon? Like it got to like the heart of something there. It was like, what about this serves you? You have to expend so much energy to close your eyes and ears to like the facts around you and to only believe this one very specific like cockamamie truth that you're like holding on to so tightly. So I didn't like quite as well, but the lyrics really grabbed me on that one. And yeah, like you said with the record store one too, it was I enjoyed the music of that one like better. And I thought it had like some really interesting production choices and sounds, especially like the instrumental part. Do you guys remember the instrumental part? It has just cool, weird instruments and weird choices. But yeah, the lyrics were the thing that grabbed me. It was just this love letter to the experience of being a record collector and going into stores and shopping for music. And I think the line that got me in that one was record spinning, wallet thinning, which I thought was like so funny. John, I know you like most of the stuff that Joe Jack does. I'm assuming you were into this.
I was into this more than I thought I was going to be. Joe Jack solo is fun, but maybe sometimes a little frustrating. It's fun because it's different than Dead Milkman, and he does kind of these funny. Joe will do like funny songs, but also sometimes will do really sad songs, and sometimes will do like really messed up songs. And I feel like a lot of people don't realize that he's being really messed up, and he's winking at you, and you know, he's like, here's the joke, and you people just don't. Maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe I'm not giving enough people credit. But I am a huge Joe Jack fan. I think going down, as you both said, going down to the record store, it's a fun song about how much fun it is to go to the record store, which I thought was cool. I had a slightly different take on Flat Earth than you two did. I thought that it was Joe Jack Talcum trying to reason with someone, not by beating them into a ground saying, you're an idiot, you're stupid, how could you believe it? To me, it's like, well, why do you believe this? Can you tell me why? Because I don't understand why you believe that. Or like, here's the evidence. So I don't think it's Joe Jack attacking someone. I think it's Joe Jack almost trying to convince someone or letting someone kind of save face and realize that Flat Earth conspiracy theories or QAnon or whatever is really stupid and just doesn't hold up to any scrutiny whatsoever, you know? So I didn't think it was – I think it was Joe Jack Talcum not dehumanizing people and trying to destroy people, rather doing what Joe Jack Talcum does best, treat everyone as a human being. And I thought that was pretty cool. That's how I read it. You know, maybe I'm wrong. We could ask Joe.
I don't think it seemed attacky. It seemed more, I think, just annoyed and like when you just sort of have your hand in your head about something, you're just kind of like, ugh, like it didn't seem like overly aggressive or like it was trying to diminish or demean anybody. No, I didn't feel that.
The one thing about Joe that can be frustrating is he's such an amazing songwriter. And it's like, Joe, I wish you would just put this to a full band. And he won't. And honestly, I think it's just because he just loves kind of the Bob Dylan Birds type thing, you know? And I think he doesn't want to do full band with regards to his solo stuff. And it's like so frustrating. It's like Record Store, I thought was like just great by itself. But actually, Record Store definitely has to be an acoustic track, I think. But some of his other like solo stuff would be so great electrified, and he just won't, you know. Anyway, Joe Jack is the man. Here's another curious song. Sealed Records has re-released the Dorothy single, and people are like, what's the Dorothy single? The Dorothy was a band that didn't actually exist. What it was, it's one of these fake, faux, tongue-in-cheek bands with Max of Rima singing, Genesis Peorage of Throbbing Gristle in the back and also doing backup vocals, and Alex Ferguson from Alternative TV supplying some of the other instruments. The A-side is I Confess, the B-side is Softness, and it's kind of like a mock or piss take of kind of 70s AM bubblegum pop, if you will. And it's being released. It's a pretty rare record. And I thought it was absolutely I thought it was fantastic for two reasons. A, I thought if I was in the car and I didn't know this was like a fake song. And when you listen to it, you can kind of tell it's a fake song just by some of the lyrical choices and some of the production. But with a little tweaking here, that this could totally pass for a 70s AM pop song. I think the song itself is just a great song, and I really enjoy it. But also, I like how it is like this pop song made by these twisted people, and they're in on the joke. And also, I love hearing Genesis Peorage's voice in the back. And if you didn't know it was him, you wouldn't even think twice about it. But that you, if you know that it's him, you're like, that's Genesis Peorage back there. And I just think it was so awesome. I bought it as soon as it came out, honestly. I think it's just cool, hilarious, and interesting.
Em, what did you think of this when you heard it?
I was a little confused, and then it was like, oh, okay, I think I get what they're trying to do. So it was really interesting. One of the first things was like, did this actually like break into the radio? Like, were they able to like just kind of slide it in somewhere, have someone play it? Do you know?
No, I believe the answer is no. And honestly, I will say, not to diminish Genesis and Rima or Max of Rima, is I wonder if they were influenced by Crass, who did break through with this exact gag. Of course, Crass made a flexi that they gave to a teenage girl's romance magazine as creative recording and sound services. And it's a song called Our Wedding, which it's basically like a young girl's romance magazine. And they put all those flexis in there and they didn't realize it was Crass, which was one of the greatest gags of punk of all time.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's the best.
Yeah, I can't always even get into like the music in this genre that's like not a parody. Do you know what I mean? Or like not a, you know, like I just that like super bubblegum pop, like yummy, like all of that stuff. Like I know there's punks that are so into that kind of music, like you know, like I know there's definitely like a punk crossover into like that genre and that stuff. I've just like never totally been able to get into it. So yeah, this was like really weird, really, really weird, because it's already kind of a weird genre that they're then kind of like doing like kind of a like a spoof of. Right. So it's just like, yeah, I found this just incredibly strange. I'm so glad I listened to it.
I love hearing Genesis's voice back there, and you can see the wise, like creepy smile on him as he's singing it. Hallie, I will say, this song, what label could this song have totally come out on in the past 7 or 8 years, and everyone would have been like, yeah, man, totally groovy.
Oh, I don't know. Who's been putting out stuff like this?
Well, if this doesn't sound like a Burger Records track circa 2016, I don't know what does. You know what I mean?
See, I don't think so. I know. No? I do know what you're saying. I do. I feel like the Burger Records scene was definitely influenced by this stuff. But I do think that they then like took that influence and mashed it together with a whole bunch of other stuff that led to that very like specific sound. But if this exact thing had come out on Burger Records, I would have found that strange. But who knows? I think what you're getting at is that if it had come out on Burger Records, that people would have just decided that it was like super cool, and they would have just like force themselves to like it or something, you know?
That's most of the records on Burger Records, and some of them were great. And, well, the label is forever tainted, quite sadly. But listen, that's a whole different conversation. Here's something that's not tainted. Here's something that's great. Tegan and Sarah, they're back in the studio. They're recording their new album. It follows Hey, I'm Just Like You, which was them re-recording a bunch of unreleased songs from the high school days, which follows the record before that. It was called Hang On to the Night. It was basically their big record, which was supposed to take them from being a big band to being a gigantic band, and sadly it did not happen. And I have many, many theories as to why. The new Tegan and Sarah album is going to be independent, which is kind of big news because they've been on their record label for a long time. It's not CBS. It's Love You to Death, Warner Brothers. So they've been dropped, I guess, or maybe the contract has ended from Warner Brothers, basically since let's see here, since 2002, was it? 2002 was basically like their first major label record, and they've been on major labels since then, and now they are no longer major label for the first time in a long, long time. Of course, major labels aren't quite as powerful as they used to be, and also major labels kind of only have giant mega bands these days and not medium bands like Tegan and Sarah. I've got a lot of thoughts. Hallie Bullitt, do you have a lot of thoughts about Tegan and Sarah and the new record?
I have thoughts, but not a lot. I kind of want to hear what your thoughts are.
Well, I'm a huge Tegan and Sarah fan, and I've seen Tegan. Actually, I haven't seen them live that many times. I think I've only seen them three times, but they are awesome. When I really got into them when The Con came out, which was an amazing album.
Me too.
The first time I saw them, it was in Santa Cruz, and they did all of The Con, but they did it backwards, which was really cool, I thought. So the entire album, last song first and so forth, which was real cool. And I've seen them three times since then. I thought the album Heartthrob, which was kind of them morphing from The Con style into what we'll call pop music, I thought that album was amazing. It's got that one song, How Come You Don't Want Me, which is an amazing song. They Say I Messed Up. All these great, great songs. And a lot of those songs were produced by, what's his name, Kirsten. Greg Kirsten. Hallie Bullitt, do you know who Greg Kirsten is?
I don't.
Do you know the band Gay Gay Ta?
No.
I want to thank you. You let me pass you while I was driving my car.
Wait, no, what? Give me an era. Give me some frame of reference.
93, 94?
No, I don't think so.
I'm the only person in the world that remembers Gay Gay Ta, apparently. Anyway, Gay Gay Ta was like this gigantic one-hit wonder that had a song called I Want to Thank You While Passing My Car, which I actually kind of enjoyed that song. Anyway, so he's a huge producer now. So Tegan and Sarah put out this record, which had some kind of, not big hits, but, you know, well-respected songs, which were pop. So Warner said to them, we want you to put out a pop record. And so they did, and it was called Love You to Death, and every single track on that album was a pop song, and it failed horribly. And why did it fail horribly? Well, because every song was a pop song, but it was a sad pop song, where when people say they want pop songs, they want happy pop songs. What they really did is, instead of doing a Carly Rae Jepsen album, they did a modern English album, which is, I think, why there was no pep to it. You know, for a pop album, you kind of got to have like a 7-to-3 ratio, 7 slappers to like 3 sad songs or 3 serious songs, maybe 6-to-4. But every song was sad. And so it's hard to have a radio hit with a sad song. I mean, you can do it. Lady Gaga did it, but it's tough. But you also need the bangers. And so I think they were kind of struggling since then. Hey, I'm Just Like You, which actually did not get great reviews, I thought was very, very good. I was amazed at how their teenage songs were so good. I realize they probably fixed them up, but I thought it was definitely was a step towards the right direction, kind of rock, kind of indie rock, a little bit of pop. I do think, though, maybe they're feeling kind of aimless. They don't know what to do. I hope they don't just come out with an acoustic album, because that would be kind of boring. I kind of just want a classic Tegan and Sarah record. I'll take some pop. I want some high-energy juicers and some, you know, sensitive songs that they have. But here's my really awkward here's my really awkward story. So Tegan and Sarah put out a book. I think the book was called Hey, I'm Just Like You, but maybe it wasn't. And basically the book was them coming of age and both learning that they're gay together. They were both gay, right? And so,
yeah, be careful how you word that.
Yeah. That used to be like people used to really like it's crazy how much press has evolved in the last 14 years. If you listen to like interviews with them together, like 2006, like DJs would ask them, like, so do you ever hook up together? And it's like, can you imagine asking someone that now? It's like, what the hell? It's crazy how much like stuff has evolved for the better in that extent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyways, there was when I first came back from California and started going into the Philly punk scene, I went to the Golden Tee House, which was a famous punk house. And one time, it was the first time I saw Bad Canoes, Marissa Paternoster's spinoff amazing punk band. And Golden Tee House, I don't want to say it was in a rough area, but one block away was a rough area. And I saw this little kid. She was like 18. She looked like a little kid standing there by herself. And I was like, I'm just trying to be nice. I'm talking to her. She's like, yeah, I go to Drexel. And I'm like, well, how'd you get here? She's like, well, she's like, I took a cab or something. And I'm like, well, how are you getting home? Maybe I'll take the bus. I'm like, you don't want to take the bus. You know what I mean? So I gave her a ride back. And since then, she was kind of my little sister. I mean, not really, but, you know, kind of my little pal that I would see at shows. And then when she was in college, you know, she started making her more friends. And so I didn't really see her because that'd be weird. You know what I mean? And so I would see my little pal around once in a while, which was cool, you know. And so my little pal kind of became the big shot at the college radio station. Now she's an employee at the college radio station. As a graduate, you know. And she's like, John, I got Tegan and Sarah tickets, and do you want to go? Because I know you like Tegan and Sarah. And I think she thought it was funny that I like Tegan and Sarah, because I would wear like a, I don't know, Napalm Death shirt or something. So I said, yeah, I want to go see Tegan and Sarah. So we went and saw Tegan and Sarah, and I thought it was just going to be a Tegan and Sarah show, but it was Tegan and Sarah playing acoustic guitar, reading from their books about how they learned that they were gay. And I'm here with my little friend who I think is gay, but I'm not sure, I never asked. You know, and I'm like, oh my God, I want to die. They're like telling like these really emotional stories about like the first time, you know, they had the hots for a girl, the first time they hooked up with a girl. And I'm and my little friend here, like, she wants to die. I could tell. Oh. I want to die. And like, I mean, you can't like leave because that'd be even worse. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh my God. So I had to suffer through. And meanwhile, it's all, I mean, it's all people not like me. I'm the only person like me in the audience, which is fine, you know, but I felt like, you know, everybody shouldn't be. So it was brutal. It was brutal. So.
Oh, no. Like, it's like what it reminded, that feeling that you described is like when we tried to, we made the mistake of trying to rewatch Superbad with my in-laws, and I like had forgotten how much just gross sex there is in that movie. And my like little and mother, my little mother-in-law was like sitting on the couch next to us, and I was like dying. Like, we finally had to call it out. We were like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have picked this one.
Brutal.
Yeah. I also love Tegan and Sarah, and actually it sounds like our trajectory as fans was like pretty similar. I like got into them with the con and then like stuck with them through, like, I remember I liked a lot of the stuff on Heartthrob. I liked Closer. I think that's around the time I finally managed to see them live, because I saw them at South By right around that time. And I liked seeing them at South By, but it was such a big venue, and it was like the middle of the day, and there were just like balloons and streamers everywhere. And you know when it's just like the afternoon, and you just can't quite, like, you just don't feel like rocking, and like rock shows seem a little bit, I don't know, there's something about like afternoon shows that you really have to like, you really have to buy in. And I just like couldn't quite, yeah, I just like couldn't quite buy in. And I was so disappointed that that was like the way that I was seeing them. But I'm so excited that they're coming out with new material. And I was like just so thrilled when they added vocals to that. There was that band, Beach Bunny, that had that sort of semi hit Cloud Nine. Like, I think it got pretty popular, and I think Beach Bunny went on some of the like late night talk shows and performed Cloud Nine when it came out. But they but I was like so excited because they did they re-released it with the original lyrics were all about like she makes me feel this way. All the original lyrics were about, he makes me feel this way, he says these things to me. And so when they did the remix with Tegan and Sarah, they made the first verse was he, and then the second verse was she, and then the third verse was they. So it was kind of cool. It just like me, it sort of just expanded the scope of that song and who could listen to it and dream that it was like about them, or, you know, something that they would sing to a crush and, or a boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. It's late. I'm getting tired. I'm starting to ramble. Anyhow, I like Tegan and Sarah. I was really excited when they added vocals to that Beach Bunny song. And so, yeah, I'm just like psyched to see what they're going to do next. And I'm with you, John. I hope it's just like, I hope it's just a good Tegan and Sarah pop album. That's like all I need, all I want. Em, are you a Tegan and Sarah fan?
I do like Tegan and Sarah. And I'm looking forward to what they're going to put out. I think it's going to be cool. And the Beach Bunny remix is really good.
So good, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's nuts.
Well, they have it. Everyone's pro Tegan and Sarah. We want Tegan and Sarah to win. You can do it, Tegan and Sarah. You can do it.
You can put out a new album. We all approve at Pug News.
Hallie Bolt, you got a song to play? Or like, what's the deal?
I do. Yeah, I do. I wanted you guys to explain to me how a song becomes popular on TikTok, because I feel like I'm a little bit too old. I think I understand. So anyhow, the song I want to play is a song that is 10 years old, but it was never particularly popular. But it has had this like huge rebirth on TikTok, when I first heard that, I was like, I don't even understand, because TikTok is not a format where you can even hear an entire song. So I just found that like so confusing. But anyhow, this song is it's by a band called Surf Curse. I think they were originally from Reno, but maybe now in LA now. Just like a punky, garagey two-piece, who I think, you know, achieved like some popularity, but not like a tremendous amount. And they have this song Freaks that they wrote, you know, when they were, I think, 18, and they're now in their late 20s and having this weird hit. This is in like the top, I think, 50, like Spotify hits. Like it's had this resurgence because teenagers were using it as the soundtrack to their TikTok videos. And I don't even like, apparently it started with some weird, like Scooby-Doo. Someone had a TikTok video about the polyamorous, like undertones of Scooby-Doo. And they decided to use, so that the chorus is like, the words are, I'm just a freak. And there's just something really raw about the sound of the song and those lyrics that is just like resonating with teenagers today. And so they have absolutely yanked this song out of obscurity. This band has now signed to Atlantic and they're releasing like a major label record because TikTok fans went bananas over this song. So anyhow, I was mentioning to you guys before we started taping that there's also just like an unfortunate thing where it kind of seems like one of the guys in this band was Me Too'd around the time that the Burger Records shakedown was happening. But then the accusations have since been retracted, I guess. So it's a little bit iffy. I don't know. I just thought it was like an interesting conversation to have. I want to put, first of all, we'll play this song. This song is called Freaks and is by Surf Curse.
Yeah.
And that was Surf Curse, not Surfboard, Surf Curse.
But like, yeah, do you guys like, are you on TikTok? Because I'm not, I don't have the time for social media like as it is. So I'm not adding another social media platform to my diet.
I've drawn my line. Instagram. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't even going to be on Instagram. And then everyone was on it. So I'm like, well, I got to get on. I've got Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's all I can handle. I don't want any more. You know what I mean? Like, I'm social enough. I've got enough social in my life. So, no, I don't know about TikTok. I believe it's just the same as Vine, except for it's owned by the Chinese government. You know, so, no, I don't know.
Em, are you on TikTok?
I'm not, just because I don't have Wi-Fi and it's hard to do it on a desktop. But, like, my friends send me links so I can watch stuff.
Oh, nice. I just think it's so interesting. I think the trajectory of the song, I just think it's super interesting. It is super catchy. And I just, like, you know, I don't know these guys personally, and I don't know if they're good guys or not good guys. Like I said, the accusations against them were retracted, and it sounds like the young woman said that maybe she was confused, or I don't know. I can't even get into that. But as a song, just talking about a song, I just think it's like the life of this song has been very interesting. And I think it's interesting that someone can choose to use an old song as the soundtrack to their TikTok video, and that then like literally millions of people can discover that song just via that. And then I guess it wasn't so much that first post had like so many views. It was that it was just that people then heard the song and they were like, oh, there's something about this chorus. I am just a freak. Like that's exactly the sentiment of this other TikTok video that I want to make. And so it was like just this. It was like the movie Gremlins. It was just like the on TikTok, this song just like kept like reproducing in this really fun and interesting way. And I hope these guys are good guys, because this is like a meteor falling out of the sky and like hitting them. You know, it's like so random, but cool, I think.
Do you think that expectations are too high now? You know what I mean? Like if they put out an album, can they actually like, will that actually help them have a hit, or will that hinder them because they've got such a story tied to them?
I mean, this is going to be tough, right? You know, I mean, I think they had like a decent following in LA. So I would imagine that those fans will probably be really excited that they're on a major label. I think it's going to be so difficult to get a bunch of teens on TikTok to be excited about this album, but you know, but maybe they will, maybe they'll just go along for the ride, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. Well, anyways, that's about all I got.
I did want to read this one. I just thought this was so interesting. Hold on, just one second. I don't know. Just as a person that, you know, just made independent music for a long time, I just thought this quote was so interesting. They said, you know, because they were interviewed by the LA Times about this song. And they said, let's see. Sorry. Dead air. Let me find this.
Well, while Hallie is reading that, I will tell the listener some important things. It is Sam Barrett and Chris Barrett's 20th anniversary today. So congratulations.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Also, down at Gino's, the famous Pat's and Gino's cheesesteak place in Philadelphia, there is a massive group-on-group fist fight happening right now. So we'll see who wins.
Oh,
all right. Sorry. Okay. So now this is not that interesting. Now that I've found it, it's not that interesting, but I liked this quote. The one of the guys from Surf Curse said, "We had to grind our teeth struggling this long, hoping that if we just kept working, there was some cosmic energy that rewards you when you're not looking." And then he goes on to say, "Obviously, we didn't expect to be a global phenomenon on an app 10 years later, but that's just how things are discovered now." So anyhow, cool little thing. Anyhow, yeah, happy anniversary to Sam and Chris. That's very cool.
I would advise the listeners, don't expect a cosmic reward when you're not looking. I think you're going to have to get out there and make it happen yourself. As proven by The Architect of Self-Destruction, The World Has Your Leftover Crack, a book that, had we waited for some deity to come down and hand out this completed book, We've been waiting a long time, people. Out now via Rare Bird Lit, and we'll see you next week.
Well, you're all alone. You can't use the phone. You can't go home. And you're on your own. Have you seen me, mates? We take the cake. We're really great. And we've got an open slate. We are in the crew, and so are you. We are in the crew, and so are you. We will always be true when we do what we do. You'll never be blue when you're in the crew. We are in the crew, and so are you. We are in the crew, and so are you. We will always be true when we do what we do. You'll never be blue when you're in the crew.
Ain't that right, boys? Who wants a membership card? We ain't got no applications. You want to be in the crew? Take a card. You over there, take this card. You over there, take this card. And all you listening out there, I got a membership card for you too.
That's all right.